Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Isaiah chapter number 2. We are looking at the beginning of the ministry of Isaiah, the great prophet of the 8th century BC. That's the 700s. He was commissioned by God as a young man right around 738 BC. That's the year that King Uzziah died. And he had this, that is, Isaiah had this great vision of God's throne in heaven. And then he was commissioned to go out and preach to a people that have got issues, to people that are going to be living their rebellious lives. And Isaiah just needs to keep the door of opportunity open for them and keep after them that they should repent. So once we saw his commission, we went back and started looking at the first 5 chapters of the book, which are kind of an overview of the entire ministry of Isaiah. It seems as if that once Isaiah had completed his ministry almost in totality, that these 5 chapters of his prophecies were put at the beginning to introduce the written word of his ministry. And so there's a lot of things in here about God's judgment upon sin, but also promises about God's resolution of sin and how he's going to bring an eternal, everlasting kingdom into existence, and Jerusalem will be the centerpiece of that kingdom. And so this has some millennial passages in it as we work through it. So Isaiah chapter 2, verse number 12, we start talking about the day of the Lord, which is the second coming of Jesus and all the things leading up to it. I like to say that the day of the Lord is basically the 3.5 years represented in the book of Revelation, that climax with the second coming of Jesus in chapter number 19. So let's talk about this day of the Lord. Isaiah 2, 12. For he who is of the armies, the Lord of hosts, has a day against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low. So this is judgment that's coming. Against all the cedars of Lebanon, lofty and lifted up, and against all the oaks of Bashan. Now, this is not that God is mad at the forests. The forests represent leaders, governments that are standing against his righteous rule. And God is going to deal with them. Against all the lofty mountains and against all the uplifted hills. Again, this is poetic language describing leadership and those that would stand against the kingdom of God. Against every high tower, against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, and against all the beautiful craft. The ships of Tarshish were a special design of transport ship, of merchandising ship, that could be found in the Mediterranean, but also in the Red Sea. The ships of Tarshish would sail out of the Gulf of Aqaba, out of Israel, to do trade probably in Africa and over on the Indian subcontinent. And God says, I'm against everything that this world is putting their trust in. Verse number 17. The haughtiness of man shall be humbled. The lofty pride of men shall be brought low. And he who is alone will be exalted in that day. So when the dust settles on the day of the Lord will be the only one left standing. Verse 18. The idols shall utterly pass away. That is the false worship. The people shall enter the caves and rocks and the holes in the ground, from before the terror of He Who Is and from the splendor of His majesty when He rises to terrify the earth. And you actually see some of that language show up in the book of Revelation with the second coming of Jesus and how people are trying to hide from the wrath of the Lamb. Verse number 20. In that day, mankind will cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to enter the caverns of the rocks and the clefts of the cliffs. And from before the terror of He Who Is, and from the splendor of His majesty when He rises to terrify the earth. And I believe that that's not just poetry there. It is the idea that the things that people put all their trust and value in, that's their idols. When God's judgment comes and they're trying to get out of God's way, get out of God's judgment path, none of that stuff that they put value in is going to be valuable anymore. The only thing that they can think of is, I've got to hide from the wrath of the Lamb. And that can be avoided by repenting. And Isaiah is trying to convince the people of his day who are facing God's wrath that they need to take that opportunity of salvation. Verse 22, stop regarding man in whose nostrils is breath, for of what account is he? Quit looking to humanity, quit looking to people, and start looking to God. Because people are not going to be able to save you. Only God. Chapter 3, for behold, he who is the God of the armies... The divine name is in there, and the word for Lord is in there, and the word for armies is all in there. So, behold, he who is over the armies as God is taking away from Jerusalem and from Judah support and supply, all support of bread, all support of water, the mighty man and the soldier, the judge and the prophet, the diviner and the elder. These are different classifications of people that the individuals inside of Israel, particularly inside of Judah we're thinking about right now, might put their trust. You know, you might put your trust in the soldiers. You might put your trust in the prophets and the judges, those that say they're tapped into the spirit world, to those that are in government, in leadership, in politics. You might put your trust in all of these different strong humans. But that's the wrong place to put your trust when God's the one bringing the judgment. Verse 3, the captain of 50, the man of rank, the counselor, the skillful magician, the expert in charms. So all of these guys that purport that they can help you out and make a difference in your life. When God's judgment falls, none of these people can help you. So what you really need to do is put your trust in God instead of people. Then you have this threat that God puts because of the judgment he's going to bring on the nation. Now, keep in mind, some of this is talking about things that we haven't gotten to in our history study because it's part of the introductory part of the book of Isaiah. When the Assyrians sweep through the Middle East as God's punishment agent, the Judeans are going to feel some of that pressure, but Jerusalem will escape being overrun. It won't be until later that God will bring the Babylonians as judgment upon them. But God wants the Judeans to know, I am going to bring judgment on you in different little bits and pieces. One of the things that's already been happening is verse number 4. I will make boys their princes, and infants shall rule over them. When you've got kings that are dying young because they've either been killed in battle or they have died because of God striking them down, their little son becomes the new king, becomes the new prince. Josiah was only a baby of less than a year old when he became king, and he had to be hidden away for 6 years before he was finally put forward by his uncle, the high priest, to be the new king. So he was only seven when he's put on the throne. And it's all because the judgment of God was happening against the land. And there will be other examples of that, where young people take power because the older people have been taken out of the equation by God. So I will make boys their princes, and infants shall rule over them. The people will oppress one another, everyone his fellow, everyone his neighbor. And youth will be insolent to the elder, and the despised to the honorable. So it's going to go badly with society breaking apart. It's basically going to be eating itself. For a man will take hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, "Well, you have a cloak. You should be our leader. This heap of ruins here, it's going to be under your rule." So when things start collapsing, then the society starts functioning on this, "Hey, you've got stuff. Why don't you be in charge? Here, you take control of this particular region that's been hit hard. You're now in charge because you happen to have clothes." That's a sure sign that you're under the judgment of God when things have gotten that chaotic. Verse 7, "In that day he will speak out, saying, 'I won't be a healer. In my house there will be neither bread nor cloak. You shall not make me leader of the people.'" So basically the people that are trying to be told you're going to be the new leader are going, "I don't want the job. I know you're only trying to make use of me. You're only trying to take advantage of me so you can get some of my stuff. I'm not going to serve just so you can con me out of my things." And the reason all this is happening is this. Verse 8, "For Jerusalem has stumbled, Judah has fallen, because their speech and their deeds are against he who is, defying his glorious presence." So basically they're coming under the prophesied judgment of God. Book of Deuteronomy, blessings and cursings. If you don't bless God, don't expect him to bless you. That's the principle that's laid down in the book of Deuteronomy for the Israeli people. And I think it applies anywhere that people claim to have a relationship with God. Don't expect him to come through with glorious things on your behalf when you're not respecting him. Verse number 9, "For the look on their faces bear witness against them. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it." Now, what was Sodom's sin? Sodom's basic sin was self-satisfaction and pride. Now, it broke out in all sorts of other things where they were cheating people and abusing the poor and the people that didn't have any power. And they were experimenting with all sorts of strange sexual things. That's all symptomatic of rejecting God and his order. And so here, the people of Israel, living not just simply up in northern Israel, but apparently also down in Judah, they've thrown away God's covenant. And because of that, judgment is falling on them. Verse number 9 continues, "Woe to them, for they have brought evil on themselves." Now that's a sad commentary, isn't it? "Tell the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their deeds." So the blessings go on the people that bless God, and the cursing goes on those that don't live up to the blessings of God. "Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for what his hands have dealt out shall be done to him. My people, infants are their oppressors, and women rule over them. Oh, my people, your guides mislead you, and you have swallowed up the course of your paths. So there's some historical references here again. The idea of little kids are now in charge of your lives, and if they get it in their heads that they want to oppress you, then that's not good for you. The women ruling over them, that's, I think, a throwback reference to Jezebel up in the north and Athaliah down in the south. That these women, these wicked women, because of the sins of their respective kingdoms, they ended up in power. And that brought judgment of God. And it's all because they're being misled. Spiritual leadership has led them down the wrong path, and they're now feeling the judgment of God on them. Verse 13, he who is has taken his place to contend. He stands to judge peoples. This word here, contend, it's that legal word again. It's the idea of God is standing up in order to bring charges against you, an indictment against you. And he's going to go through why all this bad stuff is going to happen. Verse 14, he who is will enter into judgment with the elders and princes of his people. It is you who have devoured the vineyard. The spoil of the people or the poor is in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people, by grinding the face of the poor, declares he who is the God of the armies. So one of the things about this deteriorating society is it was abusing the poor people, those that had no political power, no financial clout. They were being taken advantage of. What little they did have was being confiscated from them. And so God says, I'm taking note of all of that, and I'm going to bring that down on your heads. Verse 16, he who is said, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with outstretched necks, glancing wantonly with their eyes, mincing along as they go, tinkling with their feet. This is all a picture of the wild fashion that the women, the prominent women of Jerusalem, were wearing at this time, and how they would go to town and walk around the streets with their little tinkling ankle bracelets, and how they're wearing their special clothing, and they got their heads stuck out ahead of them and showing themselves off in all their finery. And it's all just a sign of their pride. And because of that, God was going to have to bring judgment on them. Verse 17, therefore, the Lord will strike with a scab the heads of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord, or he who is, will lay bare their secret parts. He's going to bring judgment on them. They think they've got it made. They're full of themselves. And they parade it out in the society every single day. And God says, I am going to bring them down, and they will be stripped of all this stuff. Verse 18, in that day, he who is will take away the finery of the anklets, the headbands, and the crescents, the pendants, the bracelets, the scarves, the headdresses, the armlets, the sashes, the perfume boxes, the amulets, the signet rings, the nose rings, the festal robes, the mantles, the cloaks, the handbags, the mirrors, the linen garments, the turbans, the veils. So all the accoutrements of a very wealthy group of women there in Jerusalem. God was going to take all that away from them. Now, how's he going to take it away from them? He's going to take it away from them by foreigners coming into their land. Now, with the Assyrians, Jerusalem itself is never going to come under Assyrian control. But there will be so much going on in the outer portions of Judea that they'll end up having to pay tribute and things like that. And tribute means that the king has to tax the people and take their stuff away from them. Later, when the Babylonians come through at God's judgment, they will, as a city, come under siege. and they will lose all their good stuff. So the prophecy of Isaiah is not just simply about the Assyrians coming in. It also kind of talks about what will eventually happen with the Babylonians, and I think by some extension, what happens with the Romans in AD 70. And it's all because they are full of themselves and not full of God. Verse 24 continues, instead of perfume, there will be rottenness. So instead of good smells, there's going to be bad smells. Instead of a belt, a rope. Instead of well-set hair, baldness. Sometimes when you were taken prisoner as a slave, you had your hair cut off, your beard cut off. But for a woman to have her hair completely shaved off, that was a horrible thing. Instead of a rich robe, a skirt of sackcloth. And branding instead of beauty. Slaves were often branded to show that they were in fact a slave. Your men shall fall by the sword and your mighty men in battle. And her gates, talking about Jerusalem, shall lament and mourn empty. She shall sit on the ground. So it's going to be bad, bad, bad when God's judgment catches up with these people. And this is how bad it'll be. Verse 1 of chapter 4. Seven women shall take hold of one man in that day. Because you see, there's so many men dead. So seven women will, all of them, grab a hold of one surviving man, saying, we'll eat our own bread and wear our own clothes. Only let us be called by your name. Take away our reproach. So please count us as your wife or your wives, because we don't want to be without husbands, even though most of the men have been killed in battles and such. So a really bad situation being described here. But there's a bit of light that's always thrown in here in the darkness of these tunnels. Verse number 2, in that day, the branch of he who is shall be beautiful and glorious. Now, the branch here is a reference to the Messiah. It's a messianic prophecy that we're talking about. And this word, it is a reference to how when you cut off a tree, later, a little sprig is going to come up from that and try to make a new tree. And so even though the kingdom of Jerusalem, Judea, is going to be cut down eventually under the Babylonians, it's going to spring back up again. And even though the judgment of God is going to cut off the family of David, eventually, there's going to be the ultimate branch that pops up that will be the eternal king. And that, of course, is Jesus. Now, the word here for branch is not the Hebrew word that shows up in Isaiah chapter 11, which I'm going to make reference to now. In Isaiah chapter 11, the word for branch is Netzer. And it's where the city of Nazareth gets its name. Netzerot, or branches. And so that's why Matthew makes a big deal out of the fact that Jesus is called the branch. So he is from Nazareth as the branch of the Lord. So in that day, the branch of he who is shall be beautiful and glorious. The fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. And everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem. When the Lord or he who is has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst by the spirit of judgment, by the spirit of burning. So we've got prophecies here of coming judgment, some near, some much farther ahead, but there is always this little promise that through the coming branch, God is going to bring salvation. Have a great Lord's Day of worship. See you next week, Lord willing.